there's something about that music that just takes me.
I remember that from my childhood too, man. Yeah, I remember that.
I mean, you know, it was. You knew something either really, really good was coming on TV.
Well,
or really, really.
We
bad.
Need to tell people what that is first. Sure. Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Yes, hi.
I'm Josh.
I'm Scott.
And that was the open to the ABC Weekend Special, which was a 70s, started in the 70s, but lasted into the 80s.
Mid-70s clear up into the late 80s, actually.
What they called novels for children.
Right.
But hey, before that, not speaking of the children, do the Adam and Eve promo.
That's right. This is
we have contractually have to do it off the top of the show, okay?
Specifically not for children. You can go to adamandeve.com. Use the promo code STATIC when you check out, STATIC, and you get 50% off of almost any item, and you get free shipping in the U.S., 3 free DVDs, and a free mystery gift.
Indeed.
And you also get a nice warm feeling because you're helping Josh and I keep the lights on.
Barely at this point.
But me.
So the specific one we're talking about here, because this is, well, couple of days beforehand, but this is the Halloween episode of Lost in the Static. It's a little early, but
it's as close as we're gonna get. We're not gonna
Radiodrome falls on Halloween this year. Lost in the Static does not, unfortunately.
What have you I'm guessing
Halloween retrospective.
Really good. Yeah, there you go. That ought to be fun. Hopefully Brad will show up for that one.
He will. So I made Scott watch a couple of what I called Lost Halloween specials, and there are some other ones we're going to talk about that I didn't make Scott watch.
Now, after you heard that ABC Weekend Specials, which had that glorious synthesizer line in it, that then we went right into the for some reason these ABC specials, especially the animated ones, felt the need to have music all the time.
I think they were novels for television, so they were looking at these more as specials,
right,
rather than just like an episode of a show.
Right, and that's what I'm saying, and it's that CBS Orchestra, which is who did the sound for the music, had a very distinct sound to them.
Well, and this if you noticed the music stylistically.
Yes.
And it's the same animation company. It's Hanna-Barbera on that. Very Scooby-Doo-ish.
Yes.
You know, that was a very Scooby-Doo orchestral track, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
So the one we're talking about first here is, it first aired in 1980. It was The Trouble with Miss Switch.
And
which I enjoyed quite a bit, really.
It was fun. It was one of those that again, I didn't remember until it hit me and looking
you
at
watched
it today,
this in 80?
And I watched this and that music hit and I was like, oh, nostalgia flood. Yeah, and it just came right back.
Miss Switch is based on a series of children's novels.
Right.
And this was the first one. I've never read the novel, so I don't know how much liberties were taken with the special, but I enjoyed it quite a bit. I thought it was light, it was fun. It also kind of was teaching you something because the whole bent of the thing is that witches aren't evil and they can integrate quite well into society, and it's not right to judge someone, oh, you believe in witchcraft, that means you're a bad person. That's all kind of admirable, isn't it?
It's all kind of admirable, and it was really snuck under the radar.
Yeah, that's what it was kind of subtle, done in this children's Halloween adventure kind of story.
Yep. And for those of you familiar with voice acting, this cast is pretty dang incredible. Eric Taslitz, which was in all kinds of these specials.
And Nancy McKeon, you should recognize from her live action stuff.
Right, which she was Joe from Facts of Life,
yeah.
You explained to me because the name didn't click. Now, June Foray, you would know her any of the either Disney or Chuck Jones, the Witch Hazel character.
No.
June Foray is Witch Hazel. That's what she's famous for. Also,
yeah. Well, okay. No, I was thinking of the Miss Switch.
Yeah, you were thinking of the other one. Now, June Foray was also famous because she did the voice of Rocky Squirrel.
And see, I just remembered when she's doing her evil witch dialogue in this. At any moment, I just was thinking she'd go. zip away and there'd just be hairpins yeah. floating there. Because she didn't even do anything different. This was her Witch Hazel voice as the villain.
Yes, and that's what she was famous for. Frank Welker, who is...
Everything
and its brother.
Well, you know what Frank Welker did in this? He was the guinea pig.
Yeah.
He was the talking guinea pig. Well, of course.
Welker is well known for his animal sounds.
Yeah, I know.
He's really good at it. And June and Frank, by the way, are still working. June's like 90-something.
Frank is Nibbler on Futurama, and yes. You actually get to hear his real voice when Nibbler speaks. He's Nibbler's speaking voice as well.
Yeah, he doesn't change his voice at all for that. So, man, how weird has that got to be for his wife, though, if they're ever doing anything in bed?
He just starts making uni from D&D noises or something.
Or you know, suddenly she realizes that Nibbler is nibbling.
Oh, no, it's going to be an atomic poopy. Starship fuel poopies.
Exactly. Philip Tanzini, which has been... He's kind of well known for playing the stereotypical Italian voice.
Well, and you'll notice with a lot of these, you might not recognize the names. As soon as you would hear these characters talk, you'd go, I know him from a Scooby-Doo. I know him from exactly. this. I mean, like I said, these are Hanna-Barbera, with the exception of Nancy McKeon. Really, they're Hanna-Barbera stock players, really, is what they are. They're the people that do all the Hanna-Barbera voices.
They're stock voice actors. I mean, it's a very incestuous group, so they end up doing a lot of, like I said, June Foray, Frank Welker, Tanzini, Alan Diner, all of them have worked at one point for Disney, for Chuck Jones and the Bugs Bunny crew, for Hanna-Barbera.
Which would be Warner Brothers.
Right.
For the Bugs Bunny crew.
Yeah. And then they went back. A lot of them went back for Animaniacs.
Which would be Warner Brothers again.
But yeah, it's just the nature of the beast. You only have so many voice actors out there that are.
But this was only an hour long special. Well, hour with commercials. So our version's like 40 some minutes. And like I said, I enjoyed this one. I really thought, you know, this is a forgotten Halloween special that really should pop up on air today. I'm sure the fact that there's no DVD release and whatnot, there's got to be some kind of legal rights because I've been seeing this on the bootleg circuit since the 90s. So there's got to be some kind of legal snafu that's keeping this off video.
But it's available out there and it's worth looking up.
And like Scott and I pointed out, it's subtly pro-pagan without being preachy. It is a little anti-technology. The computer witch, that was the gist of the plot. Miss Switch is a substitute teacher, and the computer witch, which is a computer in the shape of a witch, don't ask, wants to upgrade to the witch council or whatever it is to modern times, you know, 1980 modern times. And Miss Switch is like, no, we need to stick with tradition and whatnot. So it's a little anti-technology as well.
A little bit. And if you read the book, they flesh that out. There's actually an allegory of don't let the world weigh you down with all the modern stuff. You know, and we're seeing it today when, you know, with like Play 60 and stuff like that, where you have to look at kids and go, get off the video games and go outside. It's a nice day, damn it.
Well, and then something else I noticed about this one. There were no parents.
None.
There was a mention of, you know, I'll tell your parents, but I mean, these kids are just doing... It's 3 a.m. They get the telepathic message that Miss Switch is in trouble. They just get dressed and go. And I'm like, there's no parents involved in this?
None.
What the hell?
And, well, you know, think of when it came out, though. Because I know in the 80s, my sister's a bit older than I am. And I know she snuck out all the time. And she even growing up, it feels like I went out with my friends a whole lot more than kids do, than I've seen, you know, like my nephew
today.
And niece and some of today's generation.
Because today you can connect online.
But the point is, you know, I remember going and playing late at night and it not being such a big deal. So, yes, this is that taken to an extreme, being that there's no parental oversight whatsoever.
With the exception of Miss Switch and the evil witches, I don't think we see another adult in this whole thing. Even at the football game, it's just all the school kids and the football players.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just thought that struck me as weird, Scott. That struck me as weird.
That is a little weird. But again, this is based off of a children's novel, and I know a lot of kids whose ideal world would be one with no adults in it.
Well, and then this had a sequel in 82 called Miss Switch to the Rescue, which isn't nearly as good. No. The animation was cheaper. A lot of reused animation from the first one as well. You can tell this one was just put it out. We're not really putting our effort behind this one. Yeah. Just is another one.
The first one got a good name. The first one got a good reputation. They'll watch. Put it out on the name alone.
Yeah, so Miss Switch to the Rescue isn't nearly as good. The plot is just standard cartoon nonsense at this point. I mean, it lost all the specialness of The Trouble with Miss Switch.
It's worth seeing as if you want to study a production company being amazing.
Half-assing.
Lazy. Yeah, because you can... There are animation sequences in that one that are frame for frame recolored versions of what happened in the first movie.
Not even recolored. They have a recap. Remember when he's telepathically trying to communicate with her, and he's like, remember me? I helped you with this. And it goes into a 5 minute, 5 minutes of footage from the first one. And I'm like, wow, definition of padding.
Yes.
So yeah, the second one lost some of its luster. It really did. But these are forgotten Halloween specials that I don't think deserve to be forgotten. These deserve to be seen again.
Right. And luckily, like I said, most of them are available online.
Oh, yeah. Both the Miss Switches are available on YouTube.
Yeah.
Somebody has great quality off-airs from the 80s.
Yeah. You surprised me when you said that there was no DVD release, because the one you gave me, I could swear was a DVD transfer, especially that opening ABC Weekend Special animation.
Oh, they were released on home video. They were released on VHS.
Well, that's what I'm
saying. So it was probably somebody bought the original VHSs, because the second one had a couple of glitches that were clearly off-air.
Tape hits.
Yeah. And now the next one I want to talk about, Scott, is one that had been forgotten for the longest time. Again, I'm going to go to my bootleg days. This was a big bootlegger because of one specific element. I think the Paul Lynde Halloween special deserves to be forgotten. Don't you?
What are you talking about, Josh?
Well, first, why don't you explain who Paul Lynde was? Because, you know what? Even I had to remember for a second who the fuck Paul Lynde was.
Okay, Paul Lynde was a comedian in the 70s. Did a lot of stand-up stuff. Got his start in... vaudeville, actually. So he kind of
way before
that.
the 70s, because he was on Bewitched, and that's way before that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But he really hit as a stand-up in the 70s. But yeah, he was on Bewitched. He was
Uncle something.
Yeah, but he got his start in the vaudeville days, and then kind of followed from theater into TV, and was kind of famous as a variety comedian as well.
A lot of Hollywood Squares.
Tons of Hollywood Squares that he was in there. He was the center square for that for a while. And he had this very high-pitched, very nasally, very foppish. No, not really foppish. Very...
Just say it. Very gay. Very
gay.
Stereotypical, yes. Flaming gay.
Yes.
In the 70s when you couldn't do that.
Right. And that was almost one of his claims to fame was... He was, but we don't talk about it.
Yeah, it was that open secret. It was one of the... Well, like, I even made the joke when I watched this last month again. I made the joke on Facebook. You know, I'm watching the Paul Lynde Halloween special. Half over, and I'm starting to suspect this guy might be gay. This guy just might be gay.
And he's really, really well known for his voice. So, actually, let me just go ahead and play a little bit of his voice just so that people understand where we're coming from. So this is what Paul Lynde sounds like.
Happy Halloween, everybody. Loopy.
It's the Paul Lynde Halloween special, starring Paul
Lynde. No, let them hear the guest stars.
Oh, okay, all right.
Jim Conway, Roz, Pinky, Tuscadero, Kelly, Margaret Hamilton, Billy Hayes, Billy Barty, special guest star Florence Henderson, a special appearance by Betty White, and a rock and roll explosion, Kiss. And now, the Paul Lynn Halloween Special.
Thank you. Thank you. Hi, I'm Paul Lynn. Well, somebody had to be.
So much mugging.
Oh, the mugging was absolutely incredible in this one. And it makes me laugh every time I see it. They're like, Betty White and all of these, they're old vaudeville actors for the most part, with the exception of like Florence Henderson and some of the modern stars of the time.
Yeah. The modern as of 1976.
Yeah, the modern as of 1976. But, and then all of a sudden, and a rock and roll explosion from Kiss.
And see, that is why this became such a bootlegged thing. This was Kiss's first TV appearance ever. This is where Kiss, I mean, you know, they had albums out, but this is where they debuted to the mainstream.
Sure.
This was where the mainstream saw Kiss. And they play three songs in this spread over this hour-long special. And in a way, they fit for Halloween. But when you go, Kiss and Paul Lynde. No, these two things just don't go together. And it's not like they're just there. He interacts with them, and they have... Find the gag where he's interviewing them, man.
Oh, gee. Okay, this will take me a bit, but hang on. I'll find that for you. Okay, so here is the Paul Lynde interview.
With Kiss.
Kiss.
Their first TV interview.
But I've always wanted to meet Kiss. Hi, fellas. Yeah, that's what I've always wanted. Four kisses on the first date.
Margaret, your friend sure has a weird sense of humor.
Does your mother know what you're doing?
Margaret, you haven't introduced me to your friends.
Oh, forgive me. This is Ace, this is Jean, this is Peter, and this is Paul.
Oh, I love a good religious group. I can take one look at you four, and I can tell you how you got your name and how you got your act. You had a fight, and your mother's told you to kiss and make up. And your makeup is something else. How long does it take you to put it on?
We don't wear makeup.
Why don't you push the down button on your elevator shoes? You know, I have to ask you a favor. Do you think you can find it in yourself to go me one more wish?
Now, you've been so very good so far, I'll have to say no.
Oh, rats.
Rats! Anyone who's a friend of rats is a friend of mine. What's your wish?
Atta girl. I wish Kiss would do one more song for us.
Immediately, if not sooner.
Yeah, and I'm not going to play the song, but...
I think it's Detroit Rock City.
Yeah. And this interview... So, to set this interview was between Beth and Detroit Rock City.
And if you guys could tell, even without seeing it, could you kind of tell that Paul Lynde had no clue who these people actually were and that this was booked by his agent? And he's just like, I've been told they're the hottest thing on the scene right now.
Yeah. And you know, at least there we got to see a couple of, that was a signature of Paul Lynde's, was the failed joke. And his feigned
that
recovery.
Uncomfortableness.
Yeah, that uncomfortable recovery that he would make. That's kind of, that was a signature of his.
But see, this special came out on DVD 3 or 4 years ago, and I think Kiss is the only reason that it really did come out on DVD, which, by the way, one of the reasons it never came out on video.
Yeah.
Is one of the same reasons Kiss fought to keep Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park off video. They are frankly embarrassed by it and wanted people to forget it existed.
Yeah, well, meh.
So this was a huge bootleg thing. Most people were even like, just give me the Kiss segments. I don't really give a shit about the Paul Lynde stuff.
Which, honestly, it's not that bad. It's got a couple...
It's very 70s, man.
It's extremely 70s. We had Florence Henderson singing that...
Disco-ish kind of
ballad, you know, about, you know, you're the lover I've always wanted or something like that. And you're like, oh, that wraps the 70s up in a nice little burrito.
And but, she's in a dress with more sequins than fucking Liberace could have dreamed of.
Oh, yeah. And some of the jokes are very hit and miss. One thing I will give Paul Lynde credit for is that most of the jokes, I would say at least 90% of them, are not dated.
But a lot of them are kind of subtly gay, too.
Well, yeah.
And just like you heard in that one about the kiss and makeup and all that, and yes, him surrounded by the four guys. And you guys got to remember, this is 1976. You could not do gay stuff on TV.
Right. And to have, oh, Gene Simmons with that beautifully, beautifully delivered line.
Yeah.
We do not wear makeup.
Actually, well, you got to remember, have you ever seen Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park? They're not much better than that. And that's an actual movie.
Yeah, no.
That's an actual movie with alternate takes, man, and they're not much better.
I have never seen.
You've never seen Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park?
No.
No joke. It's live action. Kiss, obviously. Live action produced by Hanna-Barbera. Directed by Joseph Hanna himself. It's even got cartoon sound effects.
Wow. Okay.
But it's live action.
All right. I'm going to have to look this one up.
You need to see it.
I'm going to have to look this one up.
For the longest time, guy we used to work with, Jeremy Van Lannen, used to be roadie for Kiss.
Yes.
Bringing up Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park would get you fired.
Really?
They hated it so much that it was, you don't even bring that up. You don't bring up Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park. They wouldn't sign Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park merchandise. They wanted to forget that. But then eventually when Hanna-Barbera approached them to put it on DVD, they wrote a check with a bunch of zeros, and Kiss said, you know what? Zeros cure a lot of embarrassment.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's actually on the Kissography DVD set.
I believe it. Well, you remember, do you remember when Kiss debuted without their makeup?
Yeah.
It was the big switch in the late 80s, if I remember right, and they were going to try and rebrand themselves.
Then they were just as gay as they were in the 70s. I've never been a big Kiss fan, so.
Yeah, no, me either. I've never cared for their music all that much, but the biggest reaction I remember to them coming out of their makeup and trying to rebrand the band was, oh my God, put the makeup back on. You look so much better in it.
Yeah. Well, do you remember, I don't want to turn this into a Kiss episode, but do you remember their, gimmick comic they did for Marvel in 75?
No, I don't.
It was them as superheroes. Would you quit
sorry,
with the clicking?
Sorry, I didn't mean to do that.
It was them as superheroes, and the gimmick, Scott, you're never going to get this. Actual drops of Kiss blood were mixed into the ink for the printing process.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And that was the gimmick. Actual Kiss blood is in this comic.
Yeah, no.
Holy 70s, huh?
Yeah. It just reminds me of the little buy a vial full of Dracula's dirt or something. You remember that?
I wanted one of those. I never had one. One pops up on eBay every now and then. The old ones from Warren magazines from the 70s. And they go for way more, but I want one of those. Yeah. Damn it. I hate you.
Now, let's talk about another really, I mean, this is one that I had never heard of. I didn't know about anybody involved in it other than some of the bands. And it kind of popped up at a time when if you didn't have MTV, you didn't know what the big hype was about. And that's almost what this was almost an MTV promo reel in a strange way. But we have Incident at Channel Q.
Yeah, it's not really a Halloween special so much as a lot of bands that would qualify for Halloween.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a movie built around a TV station that was running a rock video show. And that was controversial because of the rock videos, and they would show full rock videos.
Yeah, real
full
rock
Motley
videos
Crue videos, full Lita Ford videos in this movie. And at a time when MTV was not playing this stuff, that was kind of a unique idea, actually. It's an idea that didn't date well.
Right. It really didn't execute well. And then there's this.
But like I told
you
before the show.
Fill me in on the loose story around Incident at Channel Q.
Well, the loose story, the DJ is getting crap from the community and whatnot over the debauchery he's unleashing on the youth, you know, yes, with the music
youth are
videos.
Going crazy because of rock
because,
and roll.
Because of Motley Crue's Looks That Kill video.
Yes.
And then basically he fights with the station and blah, blah, blah. And then I actually did like the plot twist at the end, though.
Meh.
The plot twist at the end, it was all a setup. Him and the station were doing it the whole time for ratings.
Meh.
I kind of liked that.
Meh.
You know, well, fuck you.
I will admit, at the time that this came out.
84.
I would riot over Lita Ford's ass.
You know what? I still would. I'm into Milfass. So
I know.
I still, Lita Ford's still really freaking hot, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But I'm not even going to bother really playing anything because it was shot on shittio, basically.
Yes, it was very much shot on shittio.
And it was...
Which really did give it a music video feel, though.
It did. It really... It felt like MTV. I'll give it to you that way. But at the same time, you have that little element of pump up the volume.
A little bit.
With the rebellious, in this case, VJ.
Yeah.
And then you know what?
For a shot on shittio, the main actors rarely weren't too bad either.
No, they weren't.
I mean, some of the supporting cast was like, yeah, that's just the guy you found at the bar, exactly. Didn't you? But
exactly.
But yeah, the main cast wasn't too bad.
Right. And then definitely B-side music videos.
But then that's the other thing. This came out in video and Laserdisc. Because of the music licensing rights, I doubt this will ever get a legit DVD release.
Never, never.
Because there are so many different bands that were probably licensed really cheap and now want a ton of money. So Incident at Channel Q will probably never have a legitimate DVD release.
But again, available online if you want to check it out.
Yeah, certain sites have it. But I want to ask you, now, they don't do Halloween specials the way they used to anymore, do they?
No, they really don't.
Because... Even by the 90s, you had two types of Halloween specials. The barely one, where you'd have a sitcom that maybe, you know, would have a couple of ooh jokes or just Halloween trappings, but it's a normal sitcom, you know, misunderstanding with a neighbor or whatever.
Roseanne being a perfect
example. No, I was going to say, or Roseanne the opposite direction, where they went so insane that you went, you become a cartoon.
That's...
And the show hadn't become a cartoon yet at that point.
Right.
So it was like... you kind of went off the rails here.
Right. Well, I got my brain crossed. I was thinking Home Improvement.
Yeah.
Where it happened to be Halloween, and maybe after a joke or after a scene to close, they would zoom in on the pumpkin or something like that. But for the most part, it was just a regular episode versus Roseanne, which went just batshit insane.
Well, and you also had other ones with like the dramas. Sometimes you would have a specific Halloween practice episode.
Well, you mentioned even the CSI with the zombie or...
Yeah, the CSI New York.
Yeah, CSI New York.
CSI New York. Directed by Joe Dante, that episode, mm-hmm, too. Mm-hmm. But then you also had ones that kind of felt like, let's just hold this one darker episode till Halloween. Like, not the syndicate, not the version of Baywatch you remember. You remember when it was on NBC in its first season when it was a network show?
No, I really don't. I gotta be honest.
They had a serial killer home invasion episode was their Halloween one.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it had nothing to do with Halloween. It was just sort of, it's a killer. We'll air that one the week before Halloween. There, Baywatch's Halloween special.
There you go. Make it a little, yeah, the slightly darker episode. But then, you know, and as far as really memorable Halloween specials, we've talked about them in the past. We've talked about It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown.
Which I'm surprised, but they still show.
They still show every now and then. Which is weird because all of those are available on DVD now. It kind of ruins the specialness.
It does. But the one I always loved, which vanished for the longest time. I mean, it was a staple of the 80s, and then it vanished through the 90s, and they still don't show it anymore today, but it's available on DVD, is the Garfield Halloween special.
Yes. Yeah, the Garfield Halloween special is great.
Because I think the whole Garfield franchise, frankly, those two live-action movies didn't revive it the way I think they thought they were, that they thought it was going to.
No, they did not revive it at all, and then, like I said, there was the French company that tried with the CG Garfield that aired on Nickelodeon that
Well, man. But see, the Garfield Halloween special is indicative of another trend we had in the 80s that I appreciated. Kind of like the Miss Switch, the first Miss Switch special. They were made for kids, but they weren't what you would think was made for kids. They weren't dumbed down. They weren't pandering.
They didn't talk down to their audience.
Because, like, look at the Garfield one. That's got some spooky fucking moments when those pirates are coming out of the fucking house at the end and out of the ground and shit. That's got some spooky moments for a kid's Halloween special, man.
I remember the first time I saw it being scared. I mean, honest to God, scared. You know, Doctor Who hide behind the couch from the Dalek type scared stuff.
Yeah, it was like, shit, this was not talking down to you. Now, when they make anything for kids now, it's dumbed down. They assume you are 8 years old, and they give you no credit at all.
Exactly. Scary Godmother being a perfect example of that one.
Scary Grandmother, I thought it was.
I thought it was Scary Godmother. I don't care.
It was that shitty, shitty-ass Cartoon Network special.
Yeah, it was a CG...
And when you say CG, yeah, it's not my just hatred of CG.
No,
this is early CG, so it's bad.
This is lots and
blocky. It looks like a PlayStation 1 game.
Yeah, low polygon count, really staunchly geometrical animated style that I didn't like it. I frankly think it looked awful, and especially because you had the 90s creeping into that one. So you had this early CG blocky art style plus dark sets and fitting sets that are very dark and lit correctly, whatnot, and then boom, neon colors accenting everything.
Now I don't know if she was involved in the special or not, but the creator of that, Jill Thompson, is from Wisconsin. Kind of a nice little side note. Because, you know, she's kind of a local girl.
Yeah, okay.
You know, I'm just saying, you know.
There's a lot of people from Wisconsin that you don't realize would come out. There's a lot of Hollywood that came out of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
It's surprising.
Oh, yeah. I did an article on it for Scene.
I know.
So, you know, Sconeywood. But, like, for Halloween specials, they used to be everywhere. Every show. Whether you were a sitcom, a drama, a variety show, a cartoon, you had an episode that came out at Halloween that was Halloween-centric or to a degree. Now, I don't think they even try. It's just like, whatever.
Not so much. And getting back to this, you know, the Forgotten Halloween special, every network, including PBS even for a little while, Halloween came around, and the whole network would get all Halloweened up, and you would get things.
Even the news.
Yeah.
You'd have that one night special newscast with the jack-o'-lanterns on the desk, and they had just...
I was the last camera operator at 25 down in Evansville that we did news over Halloween, and we jack-o'-lanterned up the set, and we put up decorations and stuff. And I remember... going to break, you would zoom off of the anchor and start zooming in on the jack-o'-lantern in the back of the set. And we did that the first year I was there. And the second year, we started putting out the decorations when October came around. And our news director came in and said, put them all away. We're not doing that anymore.
Yeah, see, I asked about that back when we worked at our former employer. And I was told unequivocally... Basically, he didn't say it in these words, but times had changed. Yeah. He's like, how would you feel if we're reporting on a massive car accident that killed 15 people and there's a fucking funny jack-o'-lantern sitting on the set and the weatherman is dressed as Frankenstein's monster? And he's like, it would demean any kind of bad news. So we don't do that because times have changed. And in a way, it got darker. So yeah, they lost the Halloween spirit.
But to me, I'd look at them and go, then talk to your producers about stacking the show correctly, because I can get you shots and we can talk about a 15-car pileup and you're not going to see all the Halloween crap in the background, and you're going to just going to see
if you direct it right.
If you direct it right. And if you produce it right, you come out of the 15-car pileup and you go over to weather for a quick recap, and he does a serious weather recap, not dressed as Frankenstein's monster, obviously, And then you come back and you do the lighthearted story going into break.
The C and D blocks.
Exactly.
but that's why we were told that they stopped doing that. It was just times had changed. And honestly, I think that was a bit of a lie. I think it was, no, this, you know, because this particular news director was one of those. That's stupid.
Yes. Everything. You know? Everything that they didn't think of, that's stupid.
That's stupid. We don't want to do that.
Exactly.
But I mean, you can find, you go to YouTube and look for like Halloween promos of things.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, you'll find a lot of, if just putting in Halloween promo, you'll find a lot for the movie.
Right.
But you find these old state, I mean, the stations used to go nuts for Halloween. Well, now,
Take a moment and promote your YouTube channel, because you've got a bunch of them.
Oh, I've got a ton of these. At Rare Video Trader is my YouTube name.
YouTube.com/Rare Video Trader.
And I've got a ton of these. But you can also find ones that aren't mine all over the place. And whole stations used to do that. Remember that, Scott? Especially if you were an indie.
If you were
a network, you kind of had to do with, you know, you had network primetime and whatnot. If you were an indie, you'd have horror movies all night on Halloween. Every syndicated show that you had, Charles in Charge, whatever, you would find the week of Halloween, you'd stop going in order.
Right.
You know, they'd be showing the seasons chronologically. Right. No, the week before Halloween, it's all five seasons Halloween episodes and whatnot. And then you'd have horror movies all night. And then now everything is just, eh. Even HBO doesn't even do it anymore.
Yeah, it's a shame. But yeah, I remember the big, big Halloween station growing up for me was WXIN out of Indianapolis. And just like you said, they were an indie at the time. Prior to them being a Fox affiliate, they were an indie station. And they just, it was Halloween-orama.
Yeah, the week of Halloween, as kids, dude, that was our best week, especially for the indie stations.
Oh yeah,
you know, you had like the Shocktober and all that. You remember that shit?
Oh yeah, and even radio stations would go nuts.
Oh yeah,
you would have it's Rocktober on Indie's Apple WZPL, you know, and stuff like that, and you would, you know, your DJ would come on in the middle, and there would be track spooky sounds in the background.
Ooh,
you know. And they would occasionally, God, I'm trying to think of who did this. Oh, Q95 out of Indianapolis, home of Bob and Tom, by the way. Q95 out of Indianapolis would always for the week of October, it was just, sometimes it was a stretch because they were running low on classic rock music, but you always had
Werewolves of London and
Frankenstein and all of the Halloween stuff.
I'm sorry, I like Frankenstein. It's a good song.
Oh, I do too. It's a great song.
But
and for some reason I am Iron Man. Always
Black Sabbath. Or first of all, it's just called Iron Man.
I know, but you always remember that I am Iron Man.
But radio stations even here used to do that. I remember early 2000s, there were a couple of radio stations that would still do that. You'd hear, the radio, that shitty little WKRP station I worked at.
Right.
On Halloween, we'd get a special Halloween CD with, you know, the opening to Night Gallery we could play as an interstitial and shit
Now, you have no idea how much it hurt working at 26 and 5 here in town, and 25 as well. We had CDs upon CDs upon CDs of holiday music
that they could have used, weren't they?
And Halloween stuff, including sound effects CDs. And this was stuff that production companies would just send you promos and go, here's our stuff. Use it. You know, use it. And if you like it, we'll send you a catalog and you can order more and blah, blah, blah. And it just gathered dust. And I so wanted to go in my last day and never got the chance, but I was
didn't know our last days were our last days
at either station for me, but I wanted to go in and just with an empty backpack and
exactly and these these channels would just be so great. And they don't, the only one that even remotely does anything like that anymore, Scott, is Turner Classic Movies. I mean, AMC pretends they do. Yeah, because we want to see the Halloween movies and Scream and stuff, you know, with a commercial break every 5 minutes for, you know, all cut to ribbons. No, that, fuck you on that.
FX did for a while. I don't know if they still do. I know MTV, back when they played music videos, would go Halloween batshit crazy.
I have, okay, in 1984, Elvira did a six-hour Halloween special. And in the middle of it, she showed Night of the Living Dead.
Sweet.
On MTV. And then in 1986, she had a four-hour Halloween special. And I've got both of those on tape. And my God, do they feel like Halloween, man. Oh, yeah. You just go, this is what 80s Halloween cable TV was.
Oh, yeah. And
Sometimes they were stretching for what qualified as a Halloween video.
Yeah.
The love theme from Godzilla. You're going, all right, you're on the line.
It's like, okay, Blue Oyster Cult's Godzilla. I could see that being a Halloween song, but the love scene or the love theme from Godzilla? Yeah. Okay.
Well, but then you had others on MTV. Now, you got to remember, this is right when heavy metal was really rising up big and hair metal was making its, you know, push into the mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have the Halloween Headbangers Ball, and I've got all these on tape from 88 through about 93. Mm-hmm. And you'd have all the Slayer and all this stuff. And yeah! And then Def Leppard, Love Bites.
Because it's popular.
Right, because it's popular, and we cannot go a week without showing that or we're going to lose teenage girls.
Exactly.
And it just throws the flow off so bad.
And what do you do?
The best one you guys need to look for, and I can make you a copy, because even if you don't like the music videos, you need to see the interstitials. Sam Kinison, 1988, hosting Halloween Headbangers Ball. Now, you're going to remember, the way VJ segments were shot then, unless you said fuck or something, you didn't do a retake. It was all done as like lives.
Right.
Sam Kinison was so high, and you could tell. He doesn't remember shooting it. He gave an interview in National Lampoon after he cleaned up. He doesn't remember shooting it. When they showed it to him, he was like, holy shit, I don't even know what I was on for that.
Yeah.
But you need to see that, man. He's high as a fucking kite.
Now, I had a thought and then it just left because I knew that it was about Halloween specials and Halloweening up and stuff, and I cannot remember for the life. Sorry.
Well, okay, then let's talk a little bit more about, you know, the way TV stopped Halloween special. I mean, you used to have the horror host.
Yes.
All of October, they'd go fucking crazy.
Again, in Indiana, ours was Sammy Terry.
I've seen Sammy Terry.
And
I didn't necessarily like, I'm not into those horror hosts that are like, I am the spooky host.
Right.
That to me always came across as just, okay, that is kid stuff, honestly.
Yeah.
And that's
what Sammy Terry was going for. The nicest guy in the world. I met him a few times and just a really, really nice guy and a good guy to work with. Speaking of horror hosts, let's just take a moment and pay respects. Earlier this month, we did lose the original Svengoolie.
Yep, the original Svengoolie. See, obviously I've seen his stuff on video, but we used to get, you know, on one of those, we talked about it before, if you, you know, on a rainy night, if you fucked with the dish just right, you could get, you know, a TV station you weren't supposed to.
Oh, sure.
We got Son of Svengoolie every now and then.
Oh, nice.
You know, because Son of Svengoolie, even though he's out of Chicago, he was syndicated, and he was played out of Milwaukee.
Sure.
So sometimes we got him from a Milwaukee station.
Okay.
If we, you know, things were just right.
Now, I was going to say up here, at least local to Green Bay, one of the best known horror hosts was Ned the Dead.
Which we both worked for.
We both worked for. And
Steve himself
was an okay guy. I was never a fan of Ned the Dead.
I grew up watching it. It was one of those, in all honesty, you might have been out of the country at this point. It was one of those ones where, at the time, I just wished he would shut up and get back to the monster movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was more interested in the movie than Ned's shenanigans.
But what was in, and he always, he had a plank he was always banging on, and And, you know, that was almost, you knew when he said the punchline to the joke because he'd bang on the plank. And then, what was the doc's name?
Dr. Moreau. And I yes. have so many issues with him because he's part of the reason. I can't go into it, I have issues. He's a traitorous, backstabbing piece of shit. That's all I'll say.
We have issues with Dr. Moreau, and we have issues. Ned. What's funny is Ned the Dead has been off the air for a while.
That's because Matt Haney drove his show into the ground.
Yes, but he's been off the air for a while, but Steve still makes appearances.
He's Ned known as in this area. Because, see, Ned the Dead started in 1984, and according to Steve, it was... They just wanted somebody, because this is when the horror host thing was getting huge. You know?
Right, right.
They Channel 11, I can't remember if they were a network affiliate at that point or if they were still an indie.
I don't think so. I think they were an indie.
They might have still been an indie, okay.
Because I don't think they got affiliated until like 89 or 90.
Because, yeah, Fox didn't start till 87, so, okay. They needed somebody to just become a horror host. He was a news photographer, and they just said, Steve's weird. Let's see if Steve will do it.
Yeah, and
no,
and,
that's the way you put it. Steve's weird. Steve will fit.
Yep. And but yeah, Steve himself, a really, really nice guy. Never cared for Ned the Dead, but he became a staple in the area. And what's hilarious is I remember who his biggest fan base was.
Prisoners. Yep. Which you can see because, you know, that's the time they're going to be showing the movies. Yeah. Violent Offenders probably going to get the most kick out of, honestly.
Yeah, that's true.
But something Steve might not want out there, Steve didn't like horror movies. He's watching these things before the show to write the jokes were a chore for him. He doesn't like horror films. He was just, I mean, to him, this was a character. Yeah. He told us that he's like, you know, you guys get into these movies. He's like, these things, ugh.
And I remember he would occasionally come to you to be his encyclopedia.
Yeah, he's like, I don't know the fucking first thing about this crap.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, okay, it starred this guy and directed by this in this year, and it had controversy because of this. And eventually he put me on the air a couple of times. I've got him on VHS somewhere. I should put him on YouTube at some point. I've got him someplace.
Yeah, you should. But yeah, the local horror host thing was fun, and I really liked it when occasionally the horror host would kind of take over the network.
They'd show up on the, because usually the way it went was you'd have the 10 o'clock news, and then unless you fell on a Saturday, because then you'd have Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
You know, if you were, because we were an NBC affiliate. So you would usually, the horror host would come on right after the news. So there were a few times I remember where the horror host would hijack the end of the news.
Yes.
Is that the kind of thing you're talking about where he would sort of hijack the D block?
Well, yeah, he would kind of hijack the D block and even during the B and C, never the A block, but during the B and the C block.
For those that don't know news, the A block is where actual news is given out. The other ones are the flighty stuff.
The A block runs from the open until the first commercial.
And then after that, you usually have the weather, and then the stories about, like, you know, Paris Hilton getting a butt plug stuck in her throat or something like that.
But you've got, you know, you would have the horror host come in during the B blocks, the C block, and be up to background shenanigans.
Yeah, he'd be behind the anchors or something.
Exactly. And then in the D block, he would just straight up take over. I remember that in Indianapolis at XINN, they had their children's host. They didn't really have a horror host, but they had the children's host for the kids hour dress up and kind of take over all of the promos on the network. And they would theme all of their promos for just about everything around this kids host, and then just like I said, Halloween it up.
And they just don't do that anymore. You want to hear a quick funny side? Do you remember our local kids host, Cuddles the Clown?
No, that was before. I never knew Cuddles.
Okay, Do you remember Sticky the Clown from Married with Children, that homicidal, just got out of prison clown?
Yes.
He was just one step above Sticky. Because, I'll be honest, one of the guys we work that I worked with at Channel 2, he used to run camera for Cuddles. Cuddles was drop dead drunk for every single one of those. He was a hardcore alky and kept a flask. And during commercials, he drank. That's the only way he could deal with the kids.
I can't blame him. I can't blame him.
But see, since I found out about that, I can't find any Cuddles footage anywhere. Oh. I want to look at it now and go, can I tell that he was fucking wasted? Because I couldn't, you know, when I'm 8 years old.
Sure.
Now, can I see that he's fucking wasted, man?
Go back and watch some of the old Bozos.
Oh,
not Bozo himself. Bozo himself Cookie? Was always sober. But yeah, Cookie, you could tell that Cookie
was imbibing a little.
Imbibing just a tad bit, yes. And it's funny.
Well, but why do you think most networks and TV stations and radio stations don't Halloween anymore? Do you think it's just the internet has sort of diluted it, or it's just financial, or you're just full of people that I don't care?
I think yes.
I asked three things, so you can't yes that.
Yes, I can, because I can think that it all three played a part. I think that attitude, that changing attitude of our news director of we don't do that anymore.
Why? We don't.
We don't. You know, and his justification kind of makes sense a little bit if you don't think about it too much. You've got the internet, and you've got, I think, another part of it is the helicopter parent movement and the everyone's a pedophile, everyone's awful, everyone's out to get my kids, and I don't want to scare my kids today. And so, you know, we've stayed PC, and so we've steered away from that Halloween spirit, unfortunately. And I think that played a huge, huge part in it, that everybody's out to get my children, so I have to... You know, my nephew is 6. He's still in a booster seat. Technically, because of his height and his weight, he should still be in a baby's car seat. Do you know that they are requiring booster seats for kids up to 13, 14 years old now?
That's ridiculous. First of all, as a 14-year-old, I can see the 14-year-old going, all right, this is dumb. I'm just going to shit on the seat at this point.
Yeah, and that's that kind of a keep everybody safe at all times deal has really made the country as a whole shy away from Halloween.
Well,
I think another thing is Halloween quickly became, and I'm hurrying with this one, Halloween quickly became an adult's
holiday.
And so you kind of have the sexy associated with it. And so, yeah, I can understand why you would want to steer that away from kids.
Well, then let me ask you this real quick. What about the political side of it, where you have in recent years pagan groups and Wiccan groups that have been protesting about the negative portrayal of witches on your network?
I think they're butthurt idiots.
I know, but do you think that plays a part in it?
Of course
it
plays a part in it. And like I said, those, God bless them, but they're butthurt idiots. And we can do
every year I
see
more and more lawsuits about that kind of nonsense.
We can do an entire show on that if you want.
We might, actually.
I think we should.
We should wait till after we see American Horror Story Coven.
Yeah.
Because that premieres tonight. The night we're recording this. So.
Yes.
So we have not seen that yet.
I can't wait till the reaction's online. But nonetheless, we've got less than a minute. Josh, if they want to get a hold of us, how can they do it?
They can contact lostinthestaticshow@gmail.com, or they can go to 1201beyond.com or geekjuicemedia.com. We are there as well.
Yes. And if you do go to 1201beyond.com and you've got some Amazon shopping to do, please use our Amazon banners. And we have recommendations for you, but you don't have to buy them. You can buy whatever you want.
And real quick.
Sure.
We are moving to SoundCloud. It's going to take a while because the transfer process is not fast.
No.
So it'll might even be December before we all get moved.
I am on a crusade to end the multi-hour downloads. I'm tired of it. So that's what we're doing. Thanks a lot for joining us, guys. join us at facebook.com/lostinthestatic, and we will see you next week.